This podcast is part of the Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom. You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones, on demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under sources.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Howdy, folks. Cowboy T here again. This is episode 4. Just as a preview of things to come, an episode in the very near future is going to feature my dad, another pro-Second Amendment liberal. We'll talk about the importance of, you know, both the right to the private sale and the need for, or the dangers of, gun registration. He and I had quite a long talk about stuff in general. Turns out his views on these two particular subjects don't necessarily always agree with my own. Well, that's kind of the point. One of the cool things about having a show is you get to pick what gets presented. Being a good liberal, we won't only present just those ideas that I find agreeable. Here and there, we'll present another side for your evaluation, and the future episode with my dad will be an example of that. Come to think of it, this episode kind of goes along with that a little bit with our first topic. I made mention recently over at one of the more liberal-oriented gun forums, specifically the Liberal Gun Club, about my view of the representation of freedom. I did it both old school style and new school style. Specifically, I posted a couple of pictures of battle rifles, both old and new. I said something about the importance of maintaining our right to keep and bear those battle rifles like those. You know, sure, there was some nice comments. You know, they felt good to hear. Hey, yeah, cool stuff. But one responder said something in particular that I think is worth addressing further. Now, it's important to remember, this is a gun forum we're talking about here. Like with any gun forum, the major focal context is, by definition, the Second Amendment. In the interest of completion, I'll quote the entire statement that was made, and then I'll follow up with my response to it. Quote, "I love my old rifles, and I love my new rifles. Freedom allows my life to take many shapes, often whatever shape I see fit. Guns will never be what freedom means to me. Guns are just guns. As much fascination and pleasure as they may hold for me, they will never be my freedom. Even if there were to come a time when a gun was the only thing that preserved my freedom, the shape of my life will always be much bigger than that. I'm not sure if this is a life values thing or a language thing, and either is okay, we should not all be the same. But when I hear," I think she meant to insert the word people here, "describe guns and freedom as equivalent, I just can't relate at all. I feel like I have no idea what they mean." Close quote. Now, I generally agree with the sentiments she expresses here. And, oh, in a discussion of the history of, say, the American Revolution, or, I don't know, the fall of the Berlin Wall and the Iron Curtain, Brown versus Board of Education, similar cases, I can see where that concern would make sense. You bring up this notion of, oh, well, guns equal freedom in the middle of a discussion of Brown versus Board of Education, that might seem a little odd. But, once again, this is a gun forum, and we do talk about guns in the Second Amendment on gun forums. Of course a gun is just a gun. It's a tool. It's an inanimate object. The great Finnish hero Simo Häyhä, whom we've mentioned here before, would confirm that. However, I'm also certain he would just as quickly confirm that the right to the private ownership of the tools of defense, and today that would be firearms, that's what allows all those other aspects of freedom to exist, to manifest themselves. Think about it. If the Finns hadn't kept their rifles instead of getting rid of them like the Soviets wanted them to do, how free do you all think Finland would be today? Would they even exist as a nation? The context of private gun ownership is really the ownership of the tools to preserve freedom. A gun is indeed just a tool, but it's a very important tool, and we can't forget that. Someday, you know, way into the future, firearms are in fact going to become obsolete unless something really strange happens technologically. Who knows what we'll have then? You know, lasers, phasers, disruptors, plasma rifles. You can tell I'm a Star Trek fan. Whatever we have. The armed forces will definitely have whatever that is. Well, by the same token, we the people also need the ready access to the same tools for the same reasons without having to ask, Govy, may I? Whatever family of technology the armed forces issues to the troops, well, that's what we also must have, just like we do today. It's no different. Back in the old days, the state of the art was, what, muskets and bayonets? That's what George Washington's army had. Well, private citizens had them too. Today, it's rifles that can shoot a lot farther, a lot more accurately, even as far as a mile and a half in some cases. And it includes handguns that can carry 17 rounds. Again, private citizens have those too. Well, in most states anyway. Same with the future plasma rifles or disruptors or whatever. I considered it important to discuss this particular point here on the Liberals' Gun Corner, because the person who said it, like me, is a San Francisco liberal. Now, apparently more toward the progressive side than I happen to be. That part's fine. And she's right in that guns don't equal freedom. Maybe it's that this person's heard too many right-wing Republican Party campaigner extremists from the NRA, and God knows there are a whole lot of those. Now, maybe there's that mental association. I know for a fact there are others who have similar concerns, because this isn't the first time I've heard about this. That's why we're talking about it. So, I suggest, especially to my fellow liberals who may be listening, the following idea. Don't let the folks like Wayne LaPierre and Chris Cox and those running the NRA sway you away from this message of freedom. It's not about them. It's about the defense of the right to keep and bear arms. It's not some, you know, love for a piece of metal. A gun is only as useful as the person using it. You know, like a car, it can be used for good or bad. There's a Swiss fellow named Mark Heim who illustrates this pretty well. Saw him recently on a YouTube video. He was being interviewed by some reporter with this beautiful accent. He himself looks to be about 50 years old or so. Well, it turns out when he was younger, he went to a Holocaust museum. He was looking at some of the exhibits. Now, for those who don't know what a Holocaust museum is, these are exhibits of what the Jews went through during Hitler's time in power. He happened to be standing next to a lampshade made out of human skin. Yeah, I know. Well, he saw an old woman standing, maybe a couple of meters from him. She was trying not to cry. Apparently, she wasn't entirely successful. He said he could just barely hear her sobbing quietly, trying to hold it back. Made quite an impression on this fella, Mr. Heim. Matter of fact, I'll let him tell us, in his own words, just what effect it had.
But it wasn't the militia that sparked Heim's interest in guns as a young man. It was an unassuming trip to a Holocaust museum.
I was going through all the exhibits and the soap and the lampshades made of people's skin. And while I was looking, I heard a funny noise, and there was an old woman, maybe 2 meters from me, and she was trying not to cry. She was sort of sobbing very quietly. She was holding it back. If she had been a few meters further away, I wouldn't have heard her. And she obviously had gone through that. That's when the whole impact of it hit me. And I promised myself I would never be in her situation. I would want to be free, never in a situation where somebody could, march us off to ovens or prisons or just take away our freedom. The key to freedom is the ability to be able to defend yourself. And if you don't have the tools to do that, then you are at the mercy of whoever wants to put you away. And the tools for that are guns.
I couldn't have said it better. I'm not sure anyone else could either. It's not about the gun equaling freedom. Never has been. It's that the tools to ensure freedom are guns. The Founding Fathers knew this. That's why they put the Second Amendment in there. to back up all those other freedoms that are ours, so that we never end up like that poor woman. We'll take a short break for station identification. Be right back.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership, gunrightsradio.com.
We're back. Unless you've been under a rock for the last 4 years, you know there's an election coming up in a couple of weeks. How do you know? For the last 4 years now, you've heard the right-winger hatred of the Obamas. And this isn't just policy-related, mind you, but personally as well. They want him gone bad. I mean more than Clinton or Carter before him. And no, it's not all about policy either. Not when they're calling him Sambo, the Kenyan, seems to be the new N-word these days. The actual N-word, the closet Muslim, calling his wife Chewbacca because they don't like that she doesn't look like them, and so on. These people are bad news, folks, and they've been hurting our cause for the Second Amendment. There is no excuse for such behavior. But by the same token, that doesn't give the Obama fans any call to go on the insulting war path either. I heard some doozies. Some of it's been really nasty potty mouth kind of stuff that I simply will not repeat here. This fight fire with fire mentality, it only gets everyone burnt. Gandhi was right. Let's talk about that for a moment. Yes, we're going to briefly discuss the upcoming election. Dun, 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 dun. October 17th, 2012. About 6:30 a.m. My clock radio alarm woke me up like it always does. Well, it turns out the radio was tuned to Steve Harvey's morning show. Seems that earlier he said something disparaging about undecided voters, and someone sent him an email calling him on it. This woman pointed out that those who are currently still undecided are different from those who don't vote. She asserted her right to get as much info about the candidates as possible before making a final decision, and that, as an American, that's exactly what she ought to be doing. Mr. Harvey's response was, and I quote, "I don't take back what I said about undecided voters. That's my opinion." Close quote. Well, yes, that is Mr. Harvey's opinion. And as with certain other things in this world, everyone has one. Well, my opinion is, as you can imagine, a little different. I view Mr. Harvey's disparaging attitude against undecided voters the same way I view, Rush Limbaugh's and Sean Hannity's disparaging attitudes against those who aren't right-winger extremists. Look, Mr. Harvey is clearly no fan of the Republicans. Okay, we got that. He's got the right to his beliefs. Heck, I'm not a fan of the Republicans either. But to disparage voters who are still deciding who to vote for, I don't know. To me, that just seems as un-American as the unpatriotic attacks against the likes of Senator Max Cleland. You remember him in the 2002 midterm election? Y'all remember him, right? The former senator who lost both legs and an arm in Vietnam? Those Bin Laden / Saddam ad / attacks against him? They were just despicable. Same with Mr. Harvey's attack on voters who are seeking all info from the candidates. As of today, when we're recording this podcast, the debates still aren't over yet, folks. There's a bit more to go. Now, lest you think that I'm somehow suggesting that that's, somehow bad to be opinionated, think again. Matter of fact, I'm sure most of you have already figured out we're pretty opinionated ourselves here at the Liberals Gun Corner. I know that I'm opinionated. But there's a difference between being opinionated versus a rude jerk. See, I've watched Steve Harvey before during some of the TV news spots here and there over the years that he's been on. More recently, he's been on the Family Feud show, the one that's at night right now. Well, like with Bill O'Reilly, I find Mr. Harvey to be a pushy, boorish, and downright rude jerk of an individual. And this attack by him against undecided voters just cements that mindset of mine about him further. Look, being insulting to viewers is not going to get them on his side any more than when the right-wingers, the militant feminists, or anybody else does it. The way you get people to your side is by making a cogent case for your position and using whatever rational, logical argument that you can to persuade others to go with you. To those who are still undecided, therefore, take whatever time you need up to the point of election day. It's your right. And speaking of the election, I'm not going to try to tell you how to vote. That's not my job here. If you really want to know how I think you should vote, well, then shoot me an email at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. I'll give you my views on it. But not here, not in this podcast. Instead, I'm going to advocate a core principle of true liberalism: participation in our government. No matter what your personal beliefs are, if you're an eligible voter, you've got to understand that this is your right. It's not a privilege. And furthermore, it's a duty. Yes, a duty. If you're a citizen of the United States of America, it is your duty to vote. Remember, we're a government for the people. Yeah. But we're also a government of the people. By the people. That's what the Founding Fathers said. So I personally don't care so much how you vote. I do care, though, that you vote. And I care that you vote your actual conscience, whatever that is. I remember seeing this. This was one of Dwight Eisenhower's campaign posters for president. Back from the 50s, it was a get out the vote campaign. Sign said, "We don't care how you vote. We care that you vote." Yeah, imagine that. Now, I'm not saying Eisenhower didn't want to win the election, obviously. Of course he did. Well, that's why I found it so remarkable that any campaign would put out such a message. But you also got to remember, though, President Eisenhower was also first General Eisenhower in World War II. He fought for this country in a huge, incredibly bloody war, possibly the bloodiest that we've ever had on this planet. He was also the man who told his troops, "Full victory, nothing less." And then he turned Patton and the Third Army loose against Nazi Germany, and we all know the history of that. Ha ha. More than many others of his era, Eisenhower understood the rights and duties of the American citizen. So maybe it's not so surprising after all that a message like that would come out of his campaign. Of course, he's also the one who warned us, correctly, about the military-industrial complex. Look where that's gotten us. Now, that may well be a subject for a future podcast. I'm still thinking about that. But as far as telling other people how to vote, folks, if you want to do that, then okay, go and do that. Feel free. But do it nicely. Be polite. Show some respect for the other person. You know, don't be like Steve Harvey, Bill O'Reilly, and these other blowhards. Instead, make a solid case and present it rationally. You know, those words that got used all over the place after the terrible shooting of Representative Gabrielle Giffords? Keep it civil. We'll take a short break for station identification. Be right back.
Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom.
Mark, how are you, friend?
Hey, Doc Weston, how are you doing?
You're listening to the Barstool Discussion.
Welcome to Gunsmithing Radio with your host, Fred Zeglin.
You're listening to the Gun Review Podcast, a podcast that is made up entirely of gun reviews from the ordinary gun owner.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast.
This is Downrange Radio, and I'm your host, Michael Bain.
You are listening to the Personal Armament Podcast, Give Me Some Lumen Show. This is Rob Robidoux.
From the commander's chair of the Rolling Chicken Hammer Love Wagon Studio, it's the Road Gunner Podcast, coming at you with 80,000 pounds of concealed carry.
You're listening to Firearms Cafe. I'm your host, Tony Brown.
You're listening to the Gun Rights Advocates Podcast, and I am your host, Mark Vanderberg.
Welcome to the Practical Defense Quick Tip of the Week. I'm your host, Alex Addicks.
Live from sunny Live Oak, Florida, it's the Pro Arms Podcast.
Now, your host for the Politics and Guns Podcast, Paul Lathrop.
Hello and welcome to episode 306. Wow, 206
of your weekly Gun Dudes Podcast.
Hell, gunslingers.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jim Fleming, and this is Reloading Radio.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Rimfire Podcast. My name is Ken Kowalski, and I'll be your host.
Shooting the Breeze, the formal gun podcast of WaltNPA.com. I am Walt White.
This is Doc Wesson, and in this episode of the Gun Nation.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Armed Citizen Podcast. I'm your host, Mick McCart.
Welcome to the Survival Gun Show. My name is Chip Monk, and I'm your humble correspondent.
Hey
Every show on the Gun Rights Radio Network gets support from the network in one form or another, and the network needs your support to keep bringing you these podcasts. Please consider going to www.gunrightsradio.com/donate and becoming a subscriber to the network. A subscription is only $2 a month and does things like helping pay for servers and bandwidth. From time to time, the network receives donated products it uses to give away to subscribers, and this year it has an amazing prize to be awarded to one lucky subscriber. The Masada Yub Group has donated an $800 Mag 40 class to be given away, and all you have to do to be eligible to win the drawing is to be a subscriber to the network. More details to be released soon on the drawing and other prizes, so don't wait. Head over to www.gunrightsradio.com/donate and become a subscriber now to be sure you're eligible to win this fantastic training opportunity.
Back on the corner again.
Yeah, I know. Keep the day job, right? Well, then that case, not too long ago, I had the opportunity to try out someone's Russian Nagant M1895 revolver. It's chambered for this cartridge called the 7.62x38R. This is kind of a strange gun. It seems like it was made for a specific purpose for the Russian Empire. It was done by firearms designer Leon Nagant of the Mosin Nagant fame. For those of you not familiar with this revolver, it's the only revolver that I know of that was designed to actually seal the barrel cylinder gap. This is that little gap between the front of the rotating cylinder and the forcing cone, also known as the back of the barrel, on any revolver. Normally, on revolvers, when you pull the trigger and it goes bang, a little burning gunpowder comes out of that gap. You can see this is a little bit of the flash right at that point. You forget to hold that revolver properly, you can feel it too, right on your forearm. Well, on this revolver, things are a little different. When the hammer is cocked, either single action or double action, it does both, the cylinder itself actually gets moved forward a bit at the last moment before the firing pin hits. Now, you combine this with the unusual design of the cartridge. Turns out, you end up sealing that little barrel cylinder gap. Now, about the cartridge, it's 7.62x38R, for R meaning for rimmed. The case is nearly as long as the 7.62x39mm round made famous by the SKS and AK-47 rifles. This revolver cartridge is a really long, rimmed, straight-walled beast of a cartridge. Bullet is set way back in there. And it's crimped at the end in this really unusual way to fit into the revolver's forcing cone. It's got to be the funniest looking revolver cartridge I have ever seen. But it works as advertised. Recoil's pretty mild, too. I was surprised how mild it was. I'm thinking 7.62? Oh boy, hang on. Not so bad at all. Well, the result of this design. Two benefits. First, you get some additional velocity out of the round, which is always a good thing. Second, and maybe even more importantly, since that barrel cylinder gap gets all sealed up, you can actually use this revolver with a sound suppressor. Effectively. Yeah. Think of the implications here, folks. Since a revolver's action is inherently a whole lot quieter than a semi-auto pistol with that noisy slide going back and forth, you know? Well, this makes for a nearly perfect, forgive me, assassin's firearm, actually. I've heard this thing with a suppressor. It really is quiet. Like, I'm talking scary quiet. Matter of fact, I hear tell that in the Soviet Union, this revolver was indeed used exactly as such sometimes, meaning suppressed to quietly take out enemies of the state. I can only imagine how Stalin's KGB must have used it. Grisly application in history, yes. But, you know, that's not all there is to this thing. The revolver's technical points do actually sound kind of interesting. Let's take a, you know, further look at this. Well, that moving the cylinder bit that makes this revolver so quiet when suppressed, turns out it has another effect, too. It makes the trigger pull really long. I'm talking like from here to low Earth orbit long. Also, bear in mind, you know, the Russian/Soviet firearms, they do have a bit of a dual reputation. They're known for being simple and rugged as all heck, no matter the conditions. You take some Russian designs, drop them in mud, they still work. But they're not exactly known for being the most, refined firearms in the world. And as I own a Russian Mosin-Nagant, so I do speak from experience here. Great guns, I love them. Just not exactly a tuned Remington 700. Well, that goes quadruply for this Nagant revolver. The double-action trigger pull's got to be over 20 pounds. And no, I'm not exaggerating either. I believe it really actually is that much. I've pulled the triggers on some Ruger double-action revolvers, you know, the Super Red Hawks and such. I used to think they were heavy. They ain't nothing compared to this Nagant. Wow. Seriously, I would have started having trouble pulling the trigger after, I don't know, maybe 15 successive shots. You want your trigger finger to be strong like Jerry Mitchell's? Just practice dry firing with this thing. You'll get there. Guaranteed. Another thing I wondered about. Given how really odd this revolver's ammo is, and the fact that the revolver isn't super common here in the United States yet, I couldn't help but think, how the heck do you get ammo for it? Well, it's Pervy Partizan to the rescue once again. This is that Serbian company that makes ammunition to American specifications. Well, they make modern ammo in 7.62x38R too. Boxer primed reloadable brass cases. And typical for Pervy Partizan, at reasonable prices. You just gotta love these guys. They make old Eastern European war horses actually usable here in the USA. I mean, how cool is that? I say pretty cool. I also understand that for those of you with reloading presses, dies for this cartridge are actually available from both RCBS and Lee Precision. I also hear they're a bit more pricey than what we'd call standard chamberings like 357M, 9mm, and so on, but they are available. This Nagant M1895 revolver is definitely an old warhorse. It's a purpose-built firearm intended for quiet operation, and I mean quiet. You've really got to love the old Eastern European arms to love this thing. It ain't exactly pretty, and it's about as refined as 10 bulls in a china shop. But it does what it was designed to do, and it actually does it pretty doggone well. Doesn't have a safety. Well, believe me, with that trigger pull, that's not a concern. I do like trying out these old-timers. Reminds me that there really isn't that much new under the sun, and the old folks came up with some pretty darn innovative ideas back in the day. The notion of a quiet revolver, and I emphasize to you, this thing is quiet. The notion of such a beast with a moving cylinder to seal the barrel cylinder gap, that's just kind of cool. Now, go ahead and check out these old war horses from Eastern Europe that are now starting to come in. Perhaps we'll start seeing other sources of ammunition for this particular pistol. Excuse me, revolver. I won't even get into that particular holy debate. But if you can get the chance to fire one, understand you'll be pulling that trigger. But it is fun, and I think you'll be kind of impressed with how Leon Nagant designed the thing back then. This is Cowboy T signing off until next time. Till then, thanks for listening. Safe shooting, and remember, whatever you do, go vote.
This podcast is supported from donations from listeners like you. Thank you for your support. We welcome one-time donations or $2 a month subscription to help support this podcast and Gun Rights Radio Network in its effort to bring you the high-quality, pro-Second Amendment podcasts. Every dollar you donate goes directly back into the network. So visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the donation button. We accept all types of credit cards, and PayPal accounts are not required. Gunrightsradio.com.